Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, news, and music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, has the doomsday comet Elenin met its doom? Using the satellite behind Google Earth to track precious water, new music from Akote Soul Sounds, and more. Here's a scientist's soundbite.
We know that the natural climate is becoming more and more variable, and we know that fresh water availability is going to become an increasingly critical issue worldwide. So we really have to be able to map water use critically at the scale that water is being used, at the scale of an individual irrigated field or the scale of a stream bed that's supporting the fish habitat.
That was satellite researcher Martha Anderson with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. More with her later, but first, Emily Howard joins us for Science News of the Week. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you for having me, Jorge. SkyandTelescope.com reported on August 30th that comet Elenin, one of several astronomical objects nowadays with doomsday connotations for a select group of non-astronomers on the internet, appears to have split apart or disintegrated. Astronomers at Harvard note that several comets disintegrate every year as they pass close to the sun and are subject to the sun's gravitational forces. Elenin was due to be closest to the sun on September 10th. More about it later in the show.
Yale researchers have discovered the source of signals in the body that trigger hair growth. They say this insight might lead to new treatments for baldness. The researchers identified stem cells within the skin's fatty layer and showed that molecular signals from stem cells were necessary to spur hair growth in mice. This research was published in the September 2nd, 2011 issue of the journal Cell.
Astronomers have found the star with the coolest temperature known so far. It's approximately 40 light years away, a Y-class brown dwarf star with a temperature of 80 degrees Fahrenheit, or 25 degrees Celsius. In other words, although we think of stars as blazing hot, this star is actually cooler than the human body.
As a result of the crash of a Russian Progress cargo spacecraft in Siberia on August 25th, all crew presently in the orbiting International Space Station might have to leave by mid-November. That's according to a NASA spokesperson on August 29th, though the current onboard crew remains safe for now. Crew rotation issues and difficulties landing the manned Soyuz craft in the middle of winter might require temporarily abandoning the International Space Station. The space station can theoretically be operated from Earth indefinitely.
A deadly strain of the bird flu virus is currently spreading in and beyond Asia, with a focus in Cambodia, where all 8 people infected so far this year have died. This August 29th report comes from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. Since appearing in 2003, this form of the virus, known as H5N1, has infected 565 people worldwide. Of these, 331 have died, according to the World Health Organization, which has more information on its website.
A dying star's explosion in a galaxy that is relatively close to Earth, some 21 million light years away, was photographed by an automatic U.S. telescope a few hours after the fact, prompting astronomers all over the world to point their telescopes toward the event. The supernova should be visible with binoculars beginning around September 3rd or 4th, and for 7 to 10 days afterwards. Astronomers are calling it the brightest Type 1A supernova of the last 30 years. Come to earthsky.org for information on how to spot it. Interviews after this. We invite you to join our community on Facebook. Find us as Earth Sky. Deborah Bird joins us now to talk about the global night sky and news about a comet. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge. This is Comet Elenin. You might have heard of this comet because people have really been talking about it on the internet, maybe not for all the right reasons. So this comet has been somewhat of a doomsday comet, according to some on the internet. It never was a doomsday comet to astronomers. Astronomers have been watching this comet for almost a year now, and it is scheduled to make its closest approach to the sun on September 10th. So at first, astronomers thought that it might be a bright comet, and they got excited about that. As this year has gone on, it hasn't looked as if it's going to be that that bright. Now it looks as if this comet has split in two. Possibly it's about to disintegrate completely as it comes in on its long journey toward its closest point to the sun on September 10th.
Well, that could be a little disappointing to sky watchers. If Comet Elenin breaks up, there won't be as much to see.
Well, disappointing to sky watchers and possibly also disappointing to the people who think that Comet Elenin is a doomsday comet. So we in the science world don't know a lot about these ideas, these doomsday ideas about Comet Elenin, because it's not really, doomsday is not really our area. But we do know that we get a lot of comment on our Facebook page about Comet Elenin. And, you know, at first it seemed as if people were saying that it was going to strike the Earth. Never astronomers saying that. In fact, the reality of the situation is that it's going to get as close as 100 times the moon's distance from Earth at its closest. So there was never a chance that it was going to strike Earth, but people were saying that there was that possibility. And then it got even weirder. People started saying that Comet Elenin was actually a spaceship or some other kind of unknown object that was a herald to yet another non-existent object, Nibiru, which people have been talking about for decades and decades and decades, and no one has ever actually found Nibiru. But, you know, there you go.
Well, so just to sum up, Comet Elenin will pose no danger to people listening here on Earth.
Absolutely.
But what should we expect to see from Comet Elenin?
Well, actually, it looks like we're not going to see anything because it looks as if the comet's disintegrating, and comets do this. I checked this morning to see how many comets disintegrate, and it looks as if there are several every year, mostly just seen by telescopes. What's going on with Elenin now is that its nucleus, or the center part of the comet, is becoming elongated, and that's a sign that it might be about to split into two pieces. So there's several comets a year that do this. Once they split into two, they may split again and, you know, basically just fall into pieces. Comets are very fragile bodies. They come from the outer solar system where it's really, really cold. So people used to call comets dirty snowballs. They're just loose conglomerations of ices. And when they get in toward the inner solar system where our big old massive sun is, they're subjected to gravitational forces that can cause them to split apart. So it's a relatively, you know, common thing for a comet to split, as apparently Elenin has done or is about to do.
So what's the bottom line on Comet Elenin, Deborah?
Okay, well, there's bad news and there's good news. So the bad news is that we probably won't see Comet Elenin in the night sky. There's still a chance that we'll see it, but if it does disintegrate, obviously it won't be seen. The good news is that it's not going to hit us. It never was going to hit us, and it's not going to hit us now. So the doomsday comet has itself been doomed.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Earth Sky producer Michael Brennan joins us to talk about Okote Soul Sounds, one of the bands featured on this program. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Yeah, this is Okote Soul Sounds. They're a band from Austin. This song is called Agua Santa, and it's off their new album, Taurus.
Agua Santa is Spanish for holy water.
That's right. I thought it was appropriate because we speak about water issues later in the program.
Michael, Okote Soul Sounds, they're one of the bands that have volunteered music for this program. Tell us about how that works and maybe how other bands can get involved.
Yeah, bands can email me at mbrennan@earthsky.org, and you can find this information on our website at earthsky.org. And we've gotten some great submissions, and we appreciate it. And we're on 22 stations and counting, so picking up steam.
Yeah, Michael, I want to thank you for doing this, for bringing the great sounds of Austin's bands to this program and mixing science and music so well.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Earth Sky's Michael Brennan. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. Worldwide, fresh water is a precious resource, and one of the most important ways we use it is to grow food. In the U.S., a satellite mission called Landsat is being used to accurately track the water used on farmers' fields to grow crops. Here to explain more is Martha Anderson, a research physical scientist with the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Dr. Anderson, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, what do you mean by evapotranspiration, and why is it important to measure evapotranspiration rates from space?
Well, evapotranspiration, or ET, as we call it for short, it describes the exchange of water vapor between the land surface and the atmosphere, and it's made up of all the water that's evaporated off of surfaces, like the soil surface, leaf surfaces, and all water that's used by plants in the process of photosynthesis, and that's the transpiration component. So it's evaporation plus transpiration. And in agricultural landscapes, ET represents the total amount of water that's used in the process of growing crops. We really need to be able to monitor ET because it's a really crucial part of the global water cycle. So if we can map ET accurately over large regions, we can estimate soil moisture availability and how much is being used for different purposes like agriculture and urban uses. And we know that fresh water is becoming increasingly scarce worldwide. So it's going to be really increasingly important that we be able to monitor this component of the water budget very accurately.
And it's amazing you can do this accurately from space. How does Landsat, in orbit around Earth, see how water is being used on an agricultural field?
Well, Landsat has a number of imaging systems, and one of them collects radiation that is in the thermal waveband. Those are wavelengths that are longer than our eyes can see. All objects emit this kind of thermal radiation. The hotter the object, the stronger the thermal emission. So using these thermal waveband systems, we can map out the temperature of the land surface remotely. With Landsat, we can do this mapping at fine enough spatial resolution that we can detect temperature differences between different fields, agricultural fields, and this is very useful. Crops that are evaporating water with very high rate of ET tend to be cooler because the evaporation is cooling down the surface. But as the crops become stressed, the transpiration shuts down, the canopy starts to heat up, and we can detect those elevated leaf temperatures from space. So with Landsat, we can detect that a given field is maybe not as healthy as it should be.
All right. I guess a cool field is a watered field.
That's correct. It's watered either naturally through taking up water from the root zone in the soil profile, or water is being artificially applied in the course of irrigation.
Now, I imagine as we're talking about how water is used, how much water is used in agricultural fields, there's a lot of people that are interested in this information, scientists, government, you know, the rest of the public. How is the water use information that Landsat collects being used?
It really is being used operationally now, and particularly in the western states where kind of water resources are getting increasingly tight and they're being depleted sometimes at an unsustainable rate. So I'll give you a couple examples of how it's being used today. In Idaho, for example, the water resource managers and the water management districts are using Landsat ET to see if individual irrigators in the irrigation districts are complying with their allocated water rights or if they're using more water than they should be. And they can tell that by looking at time sequences of Landsat ET data. And also, because we have a Landsat archive, image archive, extending over a long period of time, kind of back to the early 80s, we can make a time sequence map of how water has been used historically over a landscape. And that's really critical information if you're trying to trade your water rights with someone else. The farmers can use this information also to figure out which fields need to be irrigated and by how much they need to be irrigated. We can also study kind of the trade-offs in water use between different users. For example, in some parts of the West, you have irrigation occurring next to a stream that's supporting some important habitat, salmon spawning grounds, for example. We can use the Landsat ET to see how much the irrigated agriculture may be influencing the stream flow in these critical ecosystems.
Dr. Anderson, would you please take a minute to tell us about some of your recent research? You've recently published work on how evaporation and transpiration by plants can be used to better understand drought using Landsat data. What did you find?
Well, we know that when an area is experiencing drought, its ET is going to be necessarily lower. The soil is dry. There's less water there available for the plants to use. So actually, these ET maps make excellent drought maps as well. You can map out large areas routinely, and very critically, you don't need any ground-based rainfall data to make these drought maps. So this is a really good way to map drought in other countries that may not have the kind of the dense meteorological infrastructure. For example, out in the Horn of Africa, where they're currently experiencing some severe famine, we've been able to apply these thermal techniques and make some very nice maps of the pinpointing the drought-affected regions.
And would you like to maybe, may I follow up on that? And I'd like your thoughts on the importance of continuity. And this is something that I think really speaks to the heart of the Landsat program, is that it's provided a continuous record of changes happening to planet Earth over decades. Would you like to maybe speak to what Landsat is doing there and also what that has to do in better understanding some of the things we've been talking about, drought and water use in agricultural fields?
Absolutely. Landsat is just unique in terms of its the length of the data record that it has collected data at the scales where humans are actively kind of influencing land use and water use patterns on the Earth's surface. There's no other satellite record of this length. And really, if we want to understand what's going to happen in the future to our planet, we have to know what we've done to the planet in the past. So it's really critical that we don't develop gaps in this Landsat data acquisition record.
You know, I'd like to follow up on that thought too. As I understand, the information from Landsat is freely available to anyone. Is that right?
That's right, and that's a change that occurred just over the last couple years. It's incredibly valuable information. Let's make sure it gets used by making sure everybody can freely access the data, and that's enabled a whole new line of research to be able to do these time series analyses of how things are changing in different regions. How are urban regions expanding? How is water use changing in these expanding urban regions? How is water changing as we convert land from natural vegetation into croplands or into housing developments? These are studies we can now do that we couldn't do 5 years ago.
Yeah, and people listening may be familiar they may not be familiar necessarily with Landsat, but if they go onto Google, they use Google Earth. That's where it all comes from, isn't it? Maybe there's a Google drought coming.
Well, hey, that is exactly what I want to work for. We can get these thermal images from a number of different satellites, continental scale. We can use the weather satellites. My concept is let's integrate all this thermal information so we can make a Google Earth for drought, zooming in on areas that are drought affected, ending up at Landsat scale, where we can pinpoint what are the most drought affected crops, what areas are being most impacted, and that's going to be just very useful when we try to distribute yield loss compensation, crop insurance. At the end of the day, it's kind of on a county sub county scale. We really want to know what parts of those counties were really affected. And also in other countries, like in the Horn of Africa, if we can pinpoint where the real critical areas are soon enough, then we can better mobilize our resources towards those areas and maybe get a more effective response. But yeah, exactly. I'd like a Google Earth for drought.
Well, Dr. Anderson, this is my final question. Thank you for taking this time out. What's the most important thing you want people today to know about Landsat and water use?
We know that water issues are not going away. The world's population is increasing. We know that the natural climate is becoming more and more variable. And we know that fresh water availability is going to become an increasingly critical issue worldwide. So we really have to be able to map water use critically at the scale that water is being used, at the scale of an individual irrigated field, or the scale of a stream bed that's supporting the fish habitat, scale of a reservoir. And Landsat really is the only satellite system currently operating that can provide us routinely and globally thermal information at this critical spatial scale. So again, I would really strongly hope that we would continue to support our national land and water imaging programs through this Landsat program.
That was USDA scientist Martha Anderson speaking to us from the studios of WAMU in Washington. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Our audio engineer is Eddie Campos. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Sleep Good, Okote Soul Sounds, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.